Chapter 5. Defeat and Resurrection. The Southernization of America. There is a war going on here. It is an ancient conflict, as war and time go in this country. The Civil War is like a ghost that has not yet made its peace and roams the land seeking solace, retribution, or vindication. It continues to exist, an event without temporal boundaries, an interminable struggle that has generated perhaps as many casualties since its alleged end in 1865 as during the four preceding years when armies clashed on the battlefield. For the society that became the South after 1865, and truly one could not speak of a distinct South before that time, the Civil War and the Reconstruction that followed shaped the form it takes today. David Goldfield, Still Fighting the Civil War, The American South and Southern History, 2002. The primary duty of Southern ministers and editors in 1865 and 1866 was to convince themselves and their congregations that God had not deserted the South. The righteousness of the Southern cause, the justice of God, and Confederate dead could and would be reconciled. Even before the war ended, some ministers were developing a framework within which they could accommodate both the assurance of God's continued favor and the military defeat of the South. Daniel W. Stowell, Rebuilding Zion, The Religious Reconstruction of the South, 1863 to 1877, 1998. In the 20th century, with the SBC becoming the largest Protestant denomination in the United States, it became increasingly apparent that white Southerners had lost the war, but won their peace. Paul Harvey, Redeeming the South, 1997. No longer can Americans discuss the Battle of Gettysburg as the high watermark of Southern advance and ambition. Over the last quarter century, the one-time Confederacy has seen the population center of the United States march southwest across Missouri toward the Arkansas state line. This, while the expansion-minded Southern Baptist Convention made itself into one of the top four denominations in a dozen northern states. A born-again Texan, in turn, became the first U.S. president to be hailed by Gary Bauer, Ralph Reed, and other Dixie-flavored Christian right stalwarts as that movement's national leader. Even Gettysburg has been rewritten as a Confederate victory by the pen of a former Republican Speaker of the House from Georgia turned historical novelist. From the Pentagon to Congress and the White House, the South, more than the North, speaks with the voice and carries the insignia of national command. In the weeks after the 2004 presidential election, a redrawn map of North America circulated on the Internet, prompting wry amusement along the northern rim of states that had opposed George W. Bush. The various Canadian provinces, joined by the regions that had voted for John Kerry, were renamed the United States of Canada. To the South, the pro-Bush states congregated in another new geopolitical entity, Jesus Land. It was in fun, but not entirely, given the ratio of persons in California, in Connecticut, and on Cape Cod who had enlivened summer and pre-election parties with remarks about attractive real estate in Vancouver or hints of relocation to Nova Scotia in the event of a Bush victory. Among geographic divisions in the United States, after all, the religious and political chasms between Greater New England and the South rank as the oldest and deepest. Under cultural pressure, these stress lines frequently reappear, as in 1775 to 1776, 1814, 1860 to 1861, 1968 to 1972, and 2000 to 2004. Indeed, the 2004 contest marked an historic electoral first. Never before had all nine northeastern states, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, voted against the winning presidential candidate. Resentment ran high. For all that flippancy about a second Civil War reeked of convenient hyperbole, the sectional tension was familiar enough.